This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Tensions between police and communities of color are reaching a critical point. And a new collection of poetry called Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stretch the Sky, explores the many ways people of color experience aggressive police interactions. It features more than 80 poems from authors around the country. Some of them will be reading from a collection tonight at Burning Coal Theater in Raleigh. First, if you join me in the studio, Jackie Shelton Green is a member of North Carolina's Literary Hall of Fame. She teaches documentary poetry at the Duke Center for Documentary Studies. Jackie contributed a poem to this collection. Welcome to the State of Things. Thank you so much
for
joining
us.
Also with us is Mehta Sama. She directs the Center for Women Writers and the Creative Writing Program at Salem College in Winston-Salem. She has two poems in the book. Mehta, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Tony Medina. He's the editor of the collection. He teaches creative writing at Howard University. Tony, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you, Frank.
Let me start with you. What prompted you to gather these works by so many different artists on this subject?
Well, I mean, I've been writing poems about police shooting people of color and killing people of color for over 20 years. I gathered some poems that I thought was going to end up being a chapbook, which is a book of 40 pages or less, ended up being, you know, a full-length collection. One of the things is that as of late, the last couple of years, there's been so much, so many instances of police brutality and killings and police not being accounted for their actions that I was compelled to reach out to people like Richard Krawick at Jack Hart Press and Mehta Sama and Jackie Shelton Green, other poets who were writing about these incidents and documenting them, bearing witness to police brutality in our communities. And I just felt compelled to do it about a year and a half ago.
Well, I'd be interested to know what you saw, because as you said, you have been writing about this for 30 years, and frankly, we could be writing about this for 200 years, sadly, in this country. But how were you surprised at all by what you saw? It's not a new subject to you, and yet you reached out to other writers. Were there aspects of this that even you hadn't considered?
Well, I haven't considered the aspect of social media and the power of social media, the power of people using their devices, their cell phones, whatever, to record these instances, these incidents that would not otherwise get noticed in the media. And then the news media's 24-hour loop of these violent images of people of color, of black folks getting brutalized and beat, and just rearranging the psychic furniture in your mind and you feeling compelled to do something about it. So I didn't anticipate the Black Lives Matter movement and its importance.
Jackie Shelton Green, let me ask you about that phrase that Tony just used, rearranging the psychic furniture. I'm going to hazard a guess here that if I were African-American in this country, a lot of that furniture would be arranged from the day I was born in terms of some of what I see and understand my position here.
That's very true, Frank. And I think when Tony uses that metaphor, psychic furniture, it makes me think about the collective stress and the collective trauma that our communities have been enduring for generations. So it also becomes genetic deja vu, if you please, a place where poetics become that door into that room where that psychic furniture is always there. And I think what we as poets are learning painfully is that we also have the power to rearrange the furniture. And I think that's what this collection has done for so many. It's helping to hold space for the bearing of that witness where we are not continually victimized by the trauma.
Can you tell us more about your poem in this collection?
I wanted to write a poem, and I've written several poems far before Ferguson, but I've been thinking a lot about the mother and the mothers and communities, and especially we've all seen the mothers of the slain on TV, but those mothers who we don't have the names for. I've buried a child who died of cancer. She was not slain in the street, but I know what that holding space looks like. And especially when you have younger siblings who are also bearing witness to the loss of an older brother or sister or father or cousin or uncle or aunt. So this poem was intentionally about mothers, about the space that mothers have in this movement.
Will you read for us?
Thank you. It has been a year full of 1,000 years, each month, each day, chasing the other inside my womb, pulling, grasping, cramping for a blood birth of history, herstory already told, already buried, already rotten. A year full of limp apology, dead proclamation, faceless monsters breaking the shadow dance of other children. More mothers drink the blood, appear in daylight, wild eyes speaking, searing truths. Our daughters hold so much of the mother's grief inside their own wombs that become tombs for babies that scream, "No, I'm not coming into this world." This plight, this revolution that is brewing inside a vampire's apron pockets, inside grandmother's kitchens where they are stitching, witching, weaving, brewing ancient fodder to feed another storm of harnessed, lynched, shackled light. Mothers become a season unto themselves, storing winter blood.
Poet Jackie Shelton Green reading from her piece, Mothers. It's a poem that is featured in the new collection, Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stretch the Sky. Public reading of that collection by our poets here today, as well as others and actors tonight at 7 o'clock, Burning Coal Theater in Raleigh. We have more details at our website. Jackie, tell us about your personal experience and the way that would inform a poem like this.
Well, I know that this legacy of holding the pain needs a container. So poetry has always been a container for me to hold the joys, the celebrations, and now more sorrow than it seems the joys. So in writing this poem, I thought about a poem that I'd written for my daughter, where I was metaphorically using words like vampires and harnessing light and ice and chewing and metallic bullets and the thought of women in back seats licking blood from cop cars. So I thought about my own daughter and what it was like bearing witness to her own cancer journals and her journey with cancer. But we are what is left. We remain. The families remain, the community remains, and in the remaining, there has to be some hope. So pieces of my own personal storehouse for writing about grief instructed and formed the writing of this piece.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important element in my mind to these poems, that it is a universal experience, grief, suffering, and feeling oppressed. We've all felt some version of that, but also in a very particular way that not all of us have experienced. And I think that's what makes this poetry unique. Mehta Sama, tell us about your poetry, because you also talk about mothers in one of your poems.
I do. In the poem, in the anthology called Realism of Poetics, I think about myself potentially becoming a mother while I'm looking at a white mother and her white child having an easy day in a coffee shop and, you know, appearing to have no worries in the world at all, and imagining what it would look like for me and my kids in that coffee shop, and, you know, at what point would that child begin to lose its innocence because of conversations that I would have to have with a child about things like protecting yourself, walking home from school just in case you get stopped by the cops and things like that. So, you know, as Jackie said, I think that we hold space, you know, as mothers, we hold space, you know, as other mothers, we have this term, this idea of other mothers in Black communities, you know, so we hold that space. We have a responsibility that feels sharper, more pressing, more urgent, than I think in many other communities. I think that this is, you know, true in all communities of color. I don't think that it's just true for Black communities. I think it's true for communities of color, that we have to find ways to teach our children to be safe, you know, just from people who are sworn to serve and protect.
Will you read from your poem?
Sure. I'm actually going to read from the poem How to Not Get Killed by the NYPD, and I'll read a bit of that. Don't remove your hands from the wheel. Accept that you were pulled over. Accept the fact of the two fingers patting the badge. Accept the hostile forehead, the condescension of the mouth. Accept the fact of the wheel troubling your hands. Accept their power. Nod when they repeat, "We could give you a summons." Over and over and over, they will repeat this. Summons, summons, summons. We could give you. The light will turn yellow, red. Don't read the lights as a sign. The light will turn green again. Don't let them see your jaw set in irritation. Accept their power. Don't remember the history of police brutality in New York. Keep your hands in plain view. They shoot you in New York. 41 times, 4 times. In your grandmother's bathroom, they will shoot you. In front of your house, they will call you burglar and shoot you. Don't remember any of this. Don't ask them questions. Don't nod your head. Keep your hands on the wheel. Don't smile. Don't smile. Don't smile.
Metta Sahma, reading a poem, a part of her poem, How Not to Get Killed by the NYPD. It's featured in a new collection, Resisting Arrest Poems to Stretch the Sky, public reading at Burning Coal Theater tonight at 7. Details at our website, stateofthings.org. You had an experience like this in New York City that I don't know if it was part of what was the impetus behind this poem, but maybe you can tell us about the experience.
I had that experience in New York. I was pulled over by the police. You know, I make a joke with myself. I move around a lot. And so I make a joke with myself that I've not lived in a place until I get pulled over by the police, had an encounter with the police. And they're always terrifying. They're always verbally violent, verbally brutal. In New York, it's especially terrifying because New York has a history of deep police brutality, you know, that is decades old. And so this happens in my neighborhood. It happens in broad daylight. I was on an extraordinarily busy street that has a lot of grocery stores and bars and restaurants and clothing stores and, you know, all of these things in broad daylight. And I was really scared for my life, you know, being pulled over by the cops who actually never got out of their car. They just rolled their windows down and verbally harassed me. And it was really unclear to me what was happening, you know, and particularly because the neighborhood that I lived in was a mix of Hispanic and East Asian populations, and the cops who pulled me over were not white officers. One was Hispanic, one was an African-American man. And so I was really trying to understand what was happening in that situation, and also just thinking about, you know, what happens when you enter into law enforcement as a person of color. Mm. You know, the idea that you're suddenly, you know, this brother of blue, and somehow, you know, race gets negotiated in a way that could be very dangerous for the police officer and for their community.
Well, some ways, and let me put this question to Tony Medina, who is the editor of this volume. Tony, in some ways, that's a demonstration, or could be seen as a demonstration, the fact that officers of color are often involved in these, that it is institutional. It's not about necessarily individuals, that the institution of the police, the institution of enforcement, is structured in a way to defend the institutions. And so that's almost proof that this is more structural than it is personal or bad apples. I don't know if you see it that way.
I think it's both. I think there is racism involved. It's systemic. It's historical. And I also think that the structure of American policing is problematic. And it goes hand in hand with the amount of guns that are on the streets. And just policing in general is very problematic in how we are policed. Militarized police forces, 48-hour rule laws that don't allow for police to be interviewed within the first 48 hours, the powers that police unions have over citizenry, and the irony that the citizens are the ones that pay their taxes, but they don't have to answer to the citizens. you know, it's very dangerous.
I don't know if you're ready for this, Tony, but I wonder if you have an opportunity to read your poem, If I Die in Police, or hashtag If I Die in Police Custody, if you have it there and can read it.
I do. I wanted to read that one.
Okay.
If I die in police custody, know that I am not Houdini. That hole in my chest did not magically appear, regardless of my hands cuffed behind my back. Did I prefer my blood inside my body instead of pouring through powder-burnt flesh pooling at my feet in the back seat of some patrol car? If I die in police custody, don't let my bone fragments puzzle the public when the police insist I reach for a gun. That if I had magic powers, I would not use them to end my little life, but to save it.
Tony Medina reading his poem, hashtag If I Die in Police Custody, from the volume Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stretch the Sky. You heard earlier Jackie Shelton Green talking about these poems allowing for a new narrative. I'm going to put words in your mouth, but to take the story and make it your own in some ways, and to offer some form of hope. How do you see these poems? Is this a way of gaining hope in a hopeless situation? Is it an alarm calling our attention to a situation that has to be changed? How do you see these poems?
Well, I think that we have to remember that we have power, and we have the power of utterance and not being quiet. And writers, poets, musicians, all of the artists have always sort of come to the forefront during these times. These are not new times. We've been here before. But yes, I am on some days optimistic enough to believe that that the power of the written word does transform. So I think the more that we utter and the more that we are in spaces that are open to receiving and hearing and bearing witness and holding all of us accountable, I think one narrative that we have to swiftly change is that this is not a people of color problem, that this is our problem. That this is a national disaster, that this is our United States catastrophe, that we can't think that it's only one group that has to solve it.
Well, Tony Medina, you wrote in the introduction of the book that that we can depend on America's media to insinuate itself, however crudely and clumsily and rudely, into the sickness of the American psyche. What role do you see media taking, or should it take, in this story?
Well, I think media should not oversaturate the airwaves with these violent images, because it has a tendency to do serious harm to people and create PTSD in people and overstress them. And I think that media has a tendency also to make it very salacious and almost numbingly entertaining, when it should be more investigative reporting done to reveal this very American problem.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being on our program today. Tony Medina teaches creative writing at Howard University and is the editor of Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stretch the Sky. I've also been talking with Jackie Shelton Green, who is a member of North Carolina's Literary Hall of Fame and teaches documentary poetry at the Duke Center for Documentary Studies. And Mehta Sama directs the Center for Women Writers and the Creative Writing Program at Salem College in Winston-Salem. I want to thank all three of you for being on the program today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank.
There's a public reading from this book tonight by actors and poets, tonight at 7 o'clock, Burning Coal Theater in Raleigh, and we have the details at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, another distinguished poet, Alan Shapiro, joins us to talk about two of his new books, one volume of poetry and other essays. Alan Shapiro, up next on The State of Things. Stay tuned.